You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
Hello, I am Beth Ellison, the Chief People Officer for the Miami Marlins.
Thanks so much for finding time to join us today on the Ivy Podcast. It's super exciting. You know, we're big fans of Marlins. Big fans of, you know, all things, you know, chief people officer, diversity, inclusion. A lot of those things are very relevant topics these days. Tell us a little bit more about your background. Where do you come from career-wise, and what falls under your purview in your current role within the organization?
So I am actually born and raised here in South Florida. I have two older sisters. I'm your typical youngest sibling. And our family actually still lives in the same zip code. So very tight-knit family. I have two little boys, Wes and Walker, who are now 3.5 and 9 months old, and a great husband that actually works for our family flooring business of 67 years. And I went to the University of Florida, a big Gators fan, had a great opportunity there. Four national championships, I will highlight that, and had a chance to there run Tim Tebow's nonprofit. And right after I graduated, I transitioned into the sales training program at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I had a fantastic 7 years there and had what now I kind of dubbed the first green light, which was my first director of HR leadership position at a scaling physician staffing company. And then as of this March, I took my next big green light and have become the chief people officer here at Miami Marlins. So in my function here, it's a new role within the organization, but everything around the people strategy falls under my realm. So we talk about hiring, we talk about the development, the engagement, the performance management. Everything in my role and in my function is to really support the overall strategy of the company. And, you know, ultimately our ball team, we want to be championship level, you know, team, and we will be. And that's the same thing that we want for our staff. So it's been a really awesome 9 months. It's flown by, but that's really kind of my umbrella of scope of what I oversee.
Wow, that's exciting. You know, you don't meet that many native Floridians, at least, you know, in my circles, it's a lot of people, you know, coming from out of state and moving here. So that's, you know, that's very unique. And, you know, you talk a little bit about that winning culture within the organization. And, you know, I read a lot kind of from Pat Riley's perspective, you know, his famous book where he talks a lot about, you know, the championship really starts at the bottom. It's not just the team, it's, you know, the entire organization. So that's pretty exciting. And thanks for telling us a little bit about what falls under the chief people officer role, which I want to touch a little bit further with you as we go along. Kind of from that HR talent acquisition space, I'm curious to get your take on what are the different trends in this industry that excite you the most? Which ideas are you most passionate about?
So, you know, what I love about these new functions that we're seeing with HR is that there's been a big transition, probably in the last 3 to 5 years, where the HR function has transitioned from that administrative function to really a business partner position, where we're held accountable to the same metrics of performance as the sales team or your marketing team. And for me, I always say I'm not your typical HR person. I'm a salesperson by nature, an entrepreneur by nature that just happened to stumble into HR. But for me, I think that's really exciting. I think what I'm seeing with my peers, especially with this pandemic, and it's been, you know, pretty challenging for our role in our profession because we are the heart of the people. But this has given a new look to this role for maybe organizations who had not shifted in that mindset, where, you know, these HR leaders and HR entry-level HR professionals as well are getting a new spotlight on them. And it's given an opportunity for them to showcase their strengths that, you know, maybe their executive leadership team hadn't seen in the past. So I think that there's been a huge shift in what responsibilities and what goals that organizations have for that HR function. So for me, I felt, you know, 10 years ago, I already felt that. But you're seeing this across a lot of different organizations now.
Right. No, absolutely. That makes sense, you know, especially with the pandemic, you know, that those things have definitely been, you know, highlighted. And that's exciting to hear some of these, you know, developments in this particular industry, because from our perspective at ProSource, that's, you know, that's our target, you know, client. We partner with a lot of corporations, whether that's on very niche IT staffing or, you know, consulting space. And that's interesting to hear, especially through the last kind of this past year, how, you know, these functions have transformed into different types of actually roles within the organization, becoming almost a strategic partner versus that administrative side, kind of what you mentioned. So that's great. From, you know, the standpoint of innovation, this is a topic that's very, you know, it's a passion of mine, and it's a prevalent topic on Ivy Podcast. So building and fostering that culture of innovation, I'm pretty sure that's, you know, it's a, also at the core for your guys' organizations, you know, at Marlins. Curious to get your take on some of the principles or the strategies or anything that you haven't planned or something that may have worked for you in the past when it comes to building and fostering such culture of innovation.
So I love this question because, and I'll tell you a brief story.
Right.
When I was in college building out my resume, since a little kid, I was an inventor. I had ideas. I've actually started a few startups that have failed, and that's okay.
Love it.
And I vividly remember in college, I wrote on my resume inventor, and my roommate called me out and she said, well, what have you invented? And I said, well, I mean, touche, but it's, you know, I'm an inventor. So I just changed it. I said, okay, I gotta be honest. I changed it to inventor in progress. So, which was honest, because I didn't have anything to show for it at that point. But going through that process and having that internal love for innovation, both inside work and outside of work, you see when you bring ideas forward, so many people are so quick to shut them down. Their leaders are so quick to think, you know, of course they go to cost. They go to, that can't work here. I don't think that that's a good idea. You know, come back to me with a little bit more meat to it. And I would challenge leaders to have the yes mentality and to be open to innovation. Because if you have an employee that's coming with a new idea, that means that they're excited about what they're doing. They're bought into the organization. They want what's best for the organization. So even if it's a crazy idea, something that you're not sure if we would really utilize, it's your role as a leader to ask the right questions to say, how would we roll that out? How would that impact our strategy? What's the cost to that? What's the value of that? If that employee doesn't have all the answers right then, that's a coachable moment. That's a way for them to project plan. That's a way for them to come back with a better approach to a sales pitch to you. So when we think about innovation, the Marlins, it's a centerfold of what we do, where our goal is to be the premier location for entertainment. And with that comes innovation. And one of our three culture committees is innovation. And you know, while our teams are fantastic at going to their direct supervisor, going to a VP, going to an executive and owner with their ideas, we wanted to have a formal structure in place where, you know, our employees from every level, every department could come together to have that synergy, to break down those silos. And, you know, that one idea that maybe wasn't a good idea for that leader might work well in a different department. Right. So when you think of innovation, if you're not innovating, you're dying. Not to be morbid, but you know, for us, we want to provide the premier location with the fan experience for our employees. So for us, I think that culture of innovation is already weaved within the fabric of our organization, but having that formal structure where they can formally present to multiple leaders just gives us that elevated opportunity for ideas to be implemented and for, you know, our fans and our spectators to get the value out of it.
Right. Absolutely. I love those examples. And, you know, it definitely, it starts at the top. You gotta walk the walk. And, you know, as we talk about building and fostering the culture within the organization, it's, you know, empowering your employees, empowering, you know, staff at every level to not only come up with an idea, but also to give them the autonomy, you know, and the tools and resources in place to bring that idea to life. I think that's super important, and it definitely resonates with a lot of the things that you were just talking about, that, you know, your team coming to you, and also, you know, just at the end of the day, be able to kind of have that platform to not only fulfill your everyday duties, but also see how you can impact their organization at large. I think that's super important.
Well, and I want to add too, it's, you know, I think every organization has been innovative in this pandemic. And I'm so proud of our staff for coming up with ideas, implementing ideas. I mean, in our deepest hour of need over these, you know, 8-9 months, our staff, our foundation has found safe, innovative ways to still give back to the community. And, you know, they've been able to deliver over 800,000 meals to a community that needs help. And, you know, obviously our priority is safety, and we came up with a great action plan with that, you know, to the point where we, our ball players are out there volunteering alongside with our staff. You know, we had opportunities to innovate even on our HR processes because, you know, we're very paper heavy, and this forced us, pushed our hand at, you know, process improvement and coming up with new ideas. And, you know, even through, you know, the election, which, you know, was pretty divisive, our staff unified together. They said, you know what, we want to give back. We want, you know, in a nonpartisan way, how can we do that? And it was people from all different levels coming together, where we had a Feed the Poles initiative. We were able, we love to give out food. You know, we don't want anybody, you know, food insecurity at this point, it should not be something that we should have to face, but as an organization, it's our role. And we're committed to helping with that, especially here in the communities that we serve. But again, we have our staff members elevating and bringing these ideas that we never thought would be possible. So again, we're just going to continue that. And again, have that culture where people feel confident that their ideas are heard.
Right. No, that's very inspirational. That's super exciting. And as we take kind of this topic a little bit further, when it comes to, you know, women in leadership or female executives in the HR or different, you know, any other industry in general, those are very important and highly requested topics, at least, you know, on the Ivy podcast. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that you and I can probably talk for the entire episode just about this topic in particular. And I realize that it's a very loaded question, but from a, at least, you know, high level perspective, when it comes to sharing some tips with our listeners, when it comes to career growth or that work-life balance or anything that you wish you did during your early stages of your career, would love to hear some examples or anything that you could share with us.
So I think, and I don't want to dub myself a certain title, but I am kind of the poster child of what working women, specifically moms, are told that they can't really do, or that they tell themselves they can't do. So my first major career move, I was 8 months pregnant. So I took a leap of faith then. And then when I joined the Marlins, I had just had a newborn. So, you know, my whole life, I never want the what if, right? I want to control my future. And though I may not get where I want to be, I don't want to have that what if. I've never wanted that. And when I was 24 years old, it was the first time I thought about leaving my first job. And it was because I was working 60, 70 hours a week. And I was wondering, how am I going to have a family and have a husband and take care of a home and have a career? I don't think I can handle this. And I had an amazing mentor that asked me, oh, okay, how long have you been married? I said, well, I'm not married yet. And she said, well, how many kids do you have? I said, well, I don't have any kids yet. And she said, well, okay. She's like, I'm going to pause you. She said, these are all beautiful things and things I wish for you, but you're not at that point in your life yet. And it was I was so happy I heard that at such a young age. Because, you know, 7 years later is when that was my reality. And I look back, and had I made that kind of, it was not an irrational thought, but made a decision based on what may happen in the future that I was hopeful for, I may not be in the seat. And that's where, you know, I want women to understand that, you know, at any point in your life, you know, there's gonna be life-changing events, but life has a funny way of figuring things out. And you know, for me, every role that I applied for, I felt that I was the best person for that position. And I tell everybody, I said, it's not your job to disqualify yourself from a position. That's a recruiter's job. It's your job to earn it. It's your job to show them what your value is. And then see if you're the one selected. And that's where I think, again, there's never been one promotion. I've checked every single box, but I knew, you know, what my value was. And that's something that I tell women and men all the time, is know your values, and stay true to yourself. And that is something, sometimes it's harder than sometimes in others, but, you know, I went through the interview process here at the Marlins. And again, this is like a dream opportunity, right? And I knew there was going to be a lot of applicants, many of people that have a lot more years of experience than I have. But I would say, I know what unique value I bring. I know my strategic mindset, and I always said, you either want me in your corner driving your strategy or you don't. But that's the beauty of the interview process. And I actually just had my review about a month ago, and my boss said to me, she's like, you are as advertised, right? She's like, I said, you know what you're getting. So let's never forget that. And, you know, I think that when you're true to yourself, you find those values driven leaders that you align with during the interview process. And that's where that respect and honesty comes from. And so again, when you think about women in leadership, and I'd be remiss if I didn't, of course, bring up our amazing general manager, Kim Eng, that we hired. You know, you've got to see it in leadership. You know, you've got to see what the opportunities are for growth for you. And, you know, again, just living a life of no regret or disqualifying yourself is such an important lesson that I think everybody should think of as they drive forward in their career.
Right. Wow. I love that. I love that. And, you know, I applaud you for being able to summarize a lot of these very, very, very deep and very, you know, broad, you know, essentially lessons through, you know, in summarizing in a very short response. So I know that how difficult that is, but I appreciate all the insights in terms of what has helped you in the past and what are some of the principles that kind of you operate under. So that's pretty exciting. There's been an emergence of various roles when it comes to HR, such as, you know, chief people officer, chief inclusion officer, or chief diversity officer, and so forth. And those, you know, very important roles, and they all either fall under, I guess, HR functional area within the organization or any other division. What are your thoughts on these roles? What's the importance of these roles, and how can organizations that have not yet embraced these types of functional areas really kind of reconsider that and think about strategies to really implement effectively roles as such?
I mean, I love it, right? I wouldn't have this position if the chief people officer position didn't get created this year, but it's such a fresh take on kind of what I mentioned before of the evolution of the HR profession. And, you know, here, now that I have this opportunity to mold a role, you know, I can make it everything that is needed for the organization. You know, I can develop people under me. I can cross develop with other leaders. I can work with other leaders to ultimately hit our goals. And I think that that's when these are new positions, you have to hire the right person that's willing to take the risks and build it out, because there are going to be learning moments. And, you know, I think from a chief diversity officer position, I mean, you see them posted almost daily in large organizations, and it is very important. I always think of those roles as like that accountability checkpoint and the expert leader in the space, but that's not the person that's solely responsible for driving your D&I initiatives. And for companies just to post it to say, hey, we have this role, if they genuinely don't care about the results or have the culture and values that embrace that, you're not going to move the needle. And for us, you know, when I talk about the culture committees, we launched our diversity, inclusion, and belonging committee, where, you know, employees at every level got to volunteer, got to apply for it. And that's how you shift a culture, is if it's ingrained in the fabric of your organization at every level. But that chief diversity officer is the expert. They're the person that can effectively track your progress, that you can put initiatives in place. You know, the major league office just hired an amazing leader for that position. And that allows for more synergy throughout all of the clubs. So, you know, I think it's amazing that companies are embracing it, but it has to be the heart of your organization, not just a post and fill it and think that that's going to solve your goals. It has to be, like you said, it has to be driven from the top, but it infiltrates your organization when everyone's bought into the bigger vision and live it every single day. I mean, at the Marlins, it's interesting because I started, I'm the chief of people, and I have no people around me. I started virtually, right? So I don't know anybody. I am trying to build relationships, trying to learn more about my staff during a time of crisis. And, you know, so for me, it's like, okay, this is my opportunity to be that helper that people reach to in a time of need. And, you know, I feel like this pandemic actually opened up my accessibility throughout the business, because people needed help. We needed to take care of our people. We needed effective communications. We needed to be empathetic. We needed to provide mass communication and an opportunity for people to come together while not being able to be together. So it's just, I think these roles allow the organization to drive forward in the right manner, even though when you have to make tough decisions, these roles allow you to keep people front of mind. But I can say the executive leadership team here has that with or without me. They're the care for our people. I always say in time of crisis, you see character.
Right.
And I got thrown into it my first week. And it's just been, it's such, and not to sound cheesy, it's such an honor to be here with such amazing leaders and amazing staff. And it's a great time to be a Marlin, employee and to be a fan. And it's, again, these roles just open up so many opportunities for our people.
Right. Absolutely. No, I love that. And I love those examples. And, one thing that you've mentioned that really resonated, even if it's one single role, chief diversity officer or chief inclusion officer, it's not a one man show. Mm-hmm. It's the entire organization. And I thought that was pretty unique in the sense that it's a cultural thing within the organization that, again, really starts with the executive leadership and boils down to every organization. And then the other example that you provided in terms of forming these committees for the different areas, the inclusion and the diversity, I think that's very unique. And I know that works because I spent a lot of time talking to other executives, different organizations, and they, implement similar strategies, which allows really for, employees of every level within the organization to get involved, get their voices heard. And, at the end of the day, I think that's pretty, very, very interesting.
These roles too allow individuals to showcase their leadership ability, right? These groups that these culture committees that we have specifically, it's been a quick way for me to get to know people and see their strengths and, gives you a different view on some individuals that you may not see them in a certain light because you just don't have that exposure to them. So it's just such a great, that alone helps build their ability to build their career, for them to network with leaders that they maybe not have networked in the past with. Mm-hmm. Again, it's an awesome thing. We're just scratching the surface. It's been a part of our culture prior to these even being established. But again, the formal structure just allows us to also track the progress.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Throughout some of your responses on the topics that we've been covering, you talked a little bit, about hiring strategy, surrounding yourself with the winning team. And for every executive at the end of the day, that's always at the top of their minds, whether you're actively recruiting or not. You're always assessing, you're always trying to surround yourself and bring only, the A players and winners to your teams. I have a kind of the twofold question. From a standpoint of when a candidate interviews with you, I'm sure they go through different levels of interviews, assessments, and so forth. But when they get to you, I'm curious to get you kind of a glimpse of interview with Beth. What does that look like? As much as you can share that with us, it's the question that a lot of our audience, they just love because it provides, an insight into who the leader is within the organization. And more importantly, I'm curious to hear, what do you look for in the responses when you talk to your candidates?
So for me, when I transitioned from sales to HR, I went into recruitment. So my start in HR was recruitment, and I just love it, right? That's the lifeline. You're the gatekeeper to the talent of the organization. And for me, when I go through interviews, I'm very conversational. It's very kind of fireside chat-esque because, it's a two-way street. And I lead every interview by saying, hey, listen, this is just as much as us selecting the role as you selecting the organization. And I want to know who you are, what you're about, and I want to get to the heart of what motivates you and your experience. And it's a very organic question, questioning and just peeling back the layers. And, by the end of most interviews, I know their childhood to now. I mean, but it's important that people feel comfortable, but you give them the opportunity to showcase their expertise. It's one thing to see somebody on paper, but I'm always evaluating, is this person a culture add? Is this person somebody that is gonna bring a unique perspective to our organization, diversity of thought? And so when we look at the interview process, that is really, really important to me. It's also important for me to provide the hiring managers with a diverse candidate pool, right? And for them to really identify what is not just the immediate need for this role, but we challenge them to say, okay, what's this role look like in 2 years? What does this role look like in 3 years? And is this the person that's going to help you get there? So again, I like to have that organic approach. And sometimes I'm very honest with candidates. I like to give them honest feedback if it's not the position for them, because I think that that's important as a hiring leader to provide constructive feedback, but also say, hey, you know, it's maybe not this role. You sound like you may be better fit for this type of position. I'd love to keep you on a prospected list for us if the time comes and you're still available and interested in the overall organization. So that's kind of a little insight for me. And, you know, I'd love to just hear their honest experience and see that, how they come to life in that interview. And I just love the hiring process. I think it's such one of the most important functions in an organization is identifying and finding that top talent.
I love that. It's, you know, the person, you know, it's a space that we operate in, and it's a passion of mine, because at the end of the day, whether, you know, as an executive, it's very refreshing to hear that you take that as an opportunity to let the candidate interview you as well, and to provide them an opportunity to get to know who is the leadership on the other side of the table. It's also an opportunity for them to get to know of the type of culture they're getting into, because also for us, as we partner with corporations of different sizes, a staffing organization, it's also important for us to understand the type of culture, type of leadership. And then as we talk to the prospects and candidates, those are some of the first questions that they ask us. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, who they are, who's the leader, who's the person I'm going to be reporting to, and so forth. So that's super exciting. I love that. You and I can talk about this for hours.
I love talent acquisition. I love the hunter mentality. I love the perfect match. I've been doing it, you know, 12 plus years, and I still get so excited when I place an effective hire. You know, when you find that person, you're like, yes, we got them. I could talk for days about it.
That's awesome. To take that a little bit further, what are some of the most in-demand skill sets that you're currently looking for, and what makes them so unique? And on the flip side of that, what strategies do you deploy to really attract that very unique talent to your organization?
Yeah, so, you know, when thinking through the skill set, sometimes you want to go back to basics, right? It's we're seeing more than ever having effective communication is key in every single role. So if I think about every single job function, that is the one thing that is required. You could have the best idea, you can have the best intention, but if you can't effectively communicate that, it's not going to work. Right. So that's something that's very important. You know, we look at individuals that, you know, again, I haven't been able to go through a full baseball season yet. So I got to see what's coming to me. I'm very excited. But we've got to have people, individuals, especially in leadership roles, that can manage the day-to-day, which you can get in the weeds. Sometimes it's very easy to get sucked in to running and gunning and going. But you still have to have that strategic approach to think, okay, are we still aligned for our quarterly goals, our annual goals? And is what I'm working on right now impacting the overall goals and strategy of the organization? So that strategic mindset is very important here. And that's something that, you know, in the interview process, you probably know that too. It's one of those skills that's sometimes hard to get to the heart of without seeing somebody in operation or partnering with them on projects. So that's something that we really focus on. And, you know, when we look at what I've been learning, you know, 9 months in, is a lot of the talent in the sports industry kind of cycle through, right? The talent goes from one club to another or one team to another, which is an amazing, you know, resume and something that we value. But it's also important for us to, you know, source from different avenues. So we do have that diversity of thought. So it's a balance. It's a balance of hiring people with the sports experience, but also hiring individuals that have a unique perspective. And, you know, we look at our executive leadership team and it's a hybrid. And I think that that's why we're seeing success. And that's something that, you know, moving forward, we're going to pursue as well. And then when you look at the retention of top talent, and this is something that in this virtual environment, how do we really attract the talent? How do we get them here? Is, like you said, you guys are Marlins fans, you know, our brand is out there. We're winning. You know, we have probably one of the most recognizable CEOs with Derek Jeter. So people all know that, but they may not know our employer brand. They may not know who is that person I'll be sitting next to. What does the day in the life look like in the office, in the front office, in baseball operations? So we really have a great strategy going into this next year to really advertise that and showcase that through our employee spotlights on LinkedIn, through our employer branding on social media, because even when I went through the interview process, I was still trying to figure out, okay, what is the employer brand? So that's something we have it. Our values are established. We just want to be able to showcase them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people want to know how their job and their responsibilities, you know, you're working your tail off. How is this affecting the overall mission and goals of the organization? So we really work diligently to connect that. What is your purpose here? You have to have purpose to feel fulfilled, to be engaged, to want to stay here if you're top talent. So we work through, and we're going through our goal setting exercises right now where the staff can effectively see that on paper. And, you know, again, going back to LinkedIn, I'm a big fan of LinkedIn. I think that's how you and I can the networking world, but, you know, their LinkedIn learning portal is awesome and for every level. And it's something that we were really excited to offer to our staff going into this next year. And, you know, it's a great way for the self-directed learning. It's on-demand learning and staff can go on there and learn whatever they want, whether it's a hobby or a professional interest. Mm-hmm. It's a great tool for managers to say, because I go back to my sales days, how many times do people tell you, hey, you need to sell more? And you say, well, how do I sell more? And they're like, just go make more calls. That's not effective coaching. And that's not a way to build somebody up and drive them to success. So this allows our managers and directors and VPs to provide content to their staff that's specific to their needs. Mm-hmm. And then overall, from a company perspective, we can drive through our learning objectives from that higher level culture building through that platform. So you've got to invest in your people. You have to have constant feedback. People need to know where they stand and what opportunities they have. So I think that's how you recruit it, you keep it, and people have to see what that next step's going to be in their journey.
Right, right, absolutely. I love what you said from a standpoint of the employer brand and really kind of also showcasing the everything that you guys are doing. I think that's super important, especially, you know, you guys are being such a recognized brand, at least in, you know, in South Florida here. So I can only imagine how big of an undertaking that is as well as, you know, how exciting that is as well. But last but not least, if you could share with us, what are you currently reading, or what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that?
Well, right now, our favorite book in the Ellison house is Llama Llama Red Pajama. it's a great book. And if you hear the ludicrous rap version, it's actually very funny. But I will tell you, I was thinking about this because I was trying to think, what kind of challenge, you know, what challenges your thought process? What has an impact mm-hmm. on your career? And I got introduced to an author named Cy Wakeman. And she actually is very prevalent in the SHRM cycle. And she has a book, her first book's called No Ego. Mm-hmm. And it is a unique perspective on driving results through accountability with your employees. And what I love about it is, you know, again, when we go back to how the HR role has transitioned, you know, my office is not a venting zone, right? It's a place where you can come and we're going to strategically think through solutions. And her book just hits on it so perfectly of how you can challenge, you know, perception and facts. How can you drive accountability without enablement? How do you take somebody's ego out of it? Because we all have it, and effectively coach and develop where you ultimately lead them to success. And I love how she speaks about buy-in isn't optional. You know, making somebody happy, that's not your job, but it's your job to provide the resources to make that person feel that they have purpose and that they can be successful there. So again, the great thing about her book is that it also provides, doesn't just have this, you know, philosophy, it gives you action steps. It's things I refer back to because there's so many great tidbits in there. So I recommend that to any, you know, newer leaders, especially, you know, we all want to be empathetic, but we also need to set expectations and be able to effectively meet our goals. So it's a great way to challenge your thinking on that. And also any HR professional at any level, I just think it's an awesome tool for yourself, but also to recommend to your teams.
Right. I love that recommendation. And for our listeners, we'll make these notes available with the episode notes. Beth, I know how busy you are preparing the organization for our next championship.
Really? That's right. I got to go get down to the batting cages in a second to make sure we're doing all right down there.
I love it. Thanks so much for your time today. It was a great conversation. I love the energy. Looking forward to staying in touch with you. And perhaps we could do another episode, you know, in some time and see how much have changed, how much have transpired. So I appreciate your time.
That would be awesome. And if we do that, we're going to do it live from Marlins Park.
Yes, I love it. I love that idea. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.